Well, this is our day to visit with Fayette County Sheriff Kathy Witt. Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Fine. Did you collect all the taxes?
Not yet, but we're really close.
Are
we're in
close?
The high, we're in the high 90s thanks to our property tax owners here in Fayette County. They do a great job in preparing to pay their property tax bill every year, and our staff does a great job in ensuring that we stay on that calendar and everything keeps running.
Good. And what's the deadline?
The deadline is April 17th this year because of the weekend, et cetera.
Okay.
And so that gave them a couple of extra days. But here, February 1st, we're going to go into a 21% penalty.
Ooh.
And so I hope those that still haven't paid will go on and pay before February 1st.
Is it face value till February 1st?
No, right now it's at 5% penalty.
Okay.
And so it just really jumps after February 1.
Yeah, we don't want that.
We don't want that.
No. Who'd you bring with you today?
I brought two officers from the Lexington Division of Police. I brought Sergeant Todd Phillips and Lieutenant Joe Anderson. The lieutenant is head of the Gang Resource Unit for the Lexington Division of Police in our community, and Sergeant Phillips has been involved in this, I think, really since day one of these efforts, and so it's a real honor to have both of them. I hope that you'll give them an opportunity to tell a little bit about themselves before we dive into that subject.
Absolutely. Let's start with you, Todd.
I've been a part of this, I guess, now officially since 2006. We started as a part-time unit at the police department. We were embedded in a proactive crime unit, which was a CLEAR unit, which is still in existence today. And we started with the part-time agenda of going out and looking at the gang-related crimes in the city and starting to learn the atmosphere.
When that started?
That was the summer of 2006. I believe it was in July.
So it's been 12 years ago. Good.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
And we started learning the atmosphere at that point. You know, as a police department, we'd been battling gang stuff for a long time, mm-hmm. just didn't necessarily have a good grasp of the intel side of that and some of the things that we were dealing with from the investigative side. And so that was a push to really learn more within the community and how we may be connected to other places. And so we did that initiative for, I guess, 10 years, almost a little over 10 years, almost 11, and became a full-time unit in February of last year. And since then have expanded in how we investigate, what we look at, how we train and teach the things that we're learning, how we communicate with other units and just battle gang crime in general. It's a much different face than most folks would realize.
Joe, tell us about yourself.
I've been on the department about 18 and a half years now, and I was in the CLEAR unit with Sergeant Phillips. I was not a gang officer, but the neighborhoods that I worked did have gang problems in them, and so I worked closely with him and the other officers that were working with him. And I started supervising Sergeant Phillips January of 2016 in the CLEAR unit, and so that was the first time where I really got to work hand-in-hand with the part-time gang resource officers. And then when we did get transferred to actually a different bureau, we're now detectives, transferred there February 1st of last year and became a full-time unit. We've got five detectives and Sergeant Phillips.
That make up that unit?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to turn it back to you, Sheriff, for questions, but I'm going to open our phone lines right now because I know you guys are going to have questions for our guests. 253-5959, touch *590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com, or you can text us on our text line, 253-5959. Sheriff?
So tell us what the Gang Resource Unit actually does. Apparently you're providing resources probably to parents and to the community, but it's much bigger than that. So take us just A to Z and tell us what that resource unit does.
So that's a pretty big A to Z.
Exactly.
So we have five full-time detectives. We have a couple detectives that are assigned just the specific information movement where we collect intelligence, learn how gangs are operating, recruiting, the types of things they're doing with young people, the way that they're operating as business. And we then push that information out. We do training sessions, obviously, with schools. We do training sessions with parents and other folks to try to make sure there's an understanding of what they're seeing when their child starts showing indicators of gang involvement. Then, of course, we work with other units, federal agencies, in order to help with the investigation of various crimes that gangs are involved in. And then we carry cases ourselves. We investigate a number of different kinds of crimes. When you do gang investigations, there's not just any one pattern of criminal activity that they're involved in. They may be doing robberies in one small clique, another clique selling drugs, another clique boosting stuff in shoplifting rings. There's just a number of different things that these gangs will get involved in, and our unit really has a pretty vast responsibility in making sure that we're touching all pieces of that and then connecting to partners. I think really the biggest thing for us is partnerships. You know, five gang investigators for a city the size of Lexington, there's no way that we could cover all the needs that would be involved in gang crimes. So we partner with a lot of internal units very closely, especially violent crimes units, because we want to make sure that they have the resources from the stuff we're looking into to solve their crimes, but also with federal agencies on some bigger cases and making sure that we're doing what we need to with those cases.
Aren't those gangs competitive with each other also?
It is, and there's a different atmosphere today than you might see. If you grew up in the 80s and you watched the movie Colors and saw the old Bloods and Crips gangs, there's a different atmosphere now amongst the gang world than was then. You know, there's a lot less loyalties. You know, similar to what we see, a lot of us, depending on what age we are, have complaints about the younger generation. I mean, that just happens. Within the gang world, the older gangsters often say the same things. The loyalties are different. So the competition is different, and it's really more unstable than it used to be from the 80s to current, because there's no loyalties in many, many directions, which makes it very complicated.
Yeah, I was going to say that complicates things, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It complicates it. The stress level is much higher even amongst gang members because they don't know any direction of who they can trust, and it makes it more difficult, investigators, obviously, to determine who's on what side. So it is a different deal than what we saw in the 80s.
Are they killing each other?
Absolutely, yes.
Are they killing people that are innocent?
So that's a change that we've seen probably from the 90s to current. And we've seen a big shift even within the last 10 years that's a little alarming. There used to be, to some extent, a code, that you dealt with the folks that are involved, but you didn't deal with neutrals. And neutrals were folks that were just uninvolved. And there might be thefts and things that are related to, a crime with an initiative to gain income of some sort. But that's changing. We're seeing where, family members can be targeted. We're seeing where
– Who aren't involved.
Wow. No, it's a means to kind of relinquish control or to gain control. And so that environment – and that's not just in Lexington. That's around the country. When you see, gang violence rise in cities like Chicago and Detroit and other places, it's all the same formula. It's just bigger population of gang members. And so we're seeing the same things all over. And really, there's some of that goes on in rural areas as well.
So, Lieutenant, over the last year, what do you think has been the average age of the offenders that you all have charged?
Off the top of my head, I wouldn't be able to say, but I would say that it's definitely gotten younger.
Gotten younger?
Yes, sir.
How young?
What do you think the youngest we've...
So
teens?
Early
teens?
We talked about this before. Probably 85% of what we were doing from 2006 to the last 3 years was adults. I would say now it's probably getting closer to a 50-50 split, and the violent crimes amongst youth is on the rise. And so it's a changing environment. Some of that is because we're plugged in better, and we're going to know more and learn more, and that always is going to change stats. But some of it is just the sheer nature that gang members who were violent in nature are now getting out of jail at a quicker rate, and now they're running crews of younger people. And then those younger folks are out doing the stuff that we're seeing.
Yeah, but again, how young?
The youngest gang member that we've been involved in an investigation, and it was kind of an eye-opener to me, was 10 years old.
No.
Absolutely. Carrying guns, carrying narcotics, involved in
10 years old?
It's a strategic move for gangs. They know that it's going to be tougher as a society, as a police department, and as the courts to deal with somebody that's young. The average age that we see on recruiting is 12 years old. That's the average age.
That's shocking.
That's why we're here today.
That is shocking.
Because we want our listeners to know that. We want our moms and dads, grandparents, aunts, uncles, neighbors, school teachers, anybody that has any touch on these kids, we want them to know what to look for.
We're talking about gangs in Lexington. We have a call coming in, 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. You can email us, jackpatty@wvlkam.com, and if you want to send a text, you can do that too, 253-5959. To the phones we go. This is Pam. Pam, good morning.
Good morning. I love you, Sheriff Witt. You're so awesome.
She doesn't have her headphones on. She loves you, Sheriff Witt. You're awesome.
Well, thank you so much. I should have had headphones on for that call. I do appreciate that encouragement. Everybody can use some encouragement every day.
Yes. I just wanted to comment. You know, you were talking about how young the people, the kids are getting, and the Tide Pods these kids are chewing, and I know that's not a subject you're on, but when I saw that news story about the Tide Pods, what entered my mind was, you know, all of these programs that the children watch, isn't there any way that perhaps nationally these people that create these television shows these children watch could create shows teaching kids better options, you know, against the negative things as the drugs and the chewing of the Tide Pods and things. I think immediately when those creators of those shows see these negative trends, that they should create shows combating that. And I just wanted to make that comment, although it's not exactly to each of your guests.
Well, I'm all for more healthy TV shows for our children and now for my granddaughter. So what do you guys think?
I would agree. You know, but that's a bigger national push. You know, obviously there has to be enough money put into that so that it can combat the negative stuff you're talking about. I don't know that there's ever a way to stop some of the negative things from moving forward, but we have to get some of the positive that are big enough so that that way it can balance to some extent. Because you're right, you know, children are just seeing a lot of things that are pulling them in directions that are going down the wrong path. And we do need more of the positive back to the structural teachings of behavior and that sort of thing.
Yes, I just wish that, you know, the people doing these programs would have an epiphany of, hey, we can use this influence that we have to create positive things and the children that are watching us are the negative. So that was just my comment. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. You mentioned that these gangs are involved in different things, and of course, the first one we think of is drugs, and I'm sure that's a big part of what they do. But how about – we also hear a lot about human trafficking. Are they involved in that at all?
You know, yes. When you talk about any type of organized crime in any sort, that could fit the definition of gang. We think of gang a lot of times as youth gangs or street-level gangs that are involved in narcotics activity at the street level, or they're doing things that we see on a regular basis. But your cartels are gangs. You know, your big organized criminal enterprises, your mafias, those are all gangs in just various levels. So, yes, there's no question that any time that there is a money-making opportunity for a group of guys or gals to get involved in that's kind of in that criminal world, gangs are going to find a way to get involved in that because they're about making money.
Is there a connection between the gangs in Lexington and those, say, in Detroit?
Yes, there's going to be anywhere. That's just going to happen. Anytime that there's money being made in a small community, mid-sized city, large town, the larger organizations that are out there are going to hear word of that, and they're going to want to get involved. Now, that involvement isn't always what you see on TV with, you know, like, again, the mafia-style organization. It may be that they send somebody down that says, you're going to buy the drugs from me, because you're using our name, and that's what we expect.
Oh.
And so the connections aren't always what we visualize because of what we see on TV, but there is a connection a lot of times that starts to happen once money's being made.
And our location in the center of the eastern seaboard or whatever has a lot to do, right, with
yes, sir, yeah, with organized. So if you look at the interstates and the location, how we're located with different cities, again, Knoxville, Detroit, Chicago, Atlanta, Memphis, we're really in a good or bad area, depending on how you look at
right.
it. And I always like to say Lexington's a really great city. I'm from here. I love it here. But if you had to choose between living in Detroit or Flint or living in Lexington, no matter your occupation, where would you choose?
Sure.
And we see that, too. We see a lot of people from these larger cities that have these gang problems. And when we get out and talk to them, they show us an ID or they tell us where they're from. And they're from those areas. And they'll say they're here for, you know, employment opportunities or family or whatever. And we usually can disprove that pretty quickly. But, yes, we see them.
So how can we make that less palatable for those who want to come to live in Lexington to commit crime rather than the law-abiding people who want to come and contribute to our community? So stiffer penalties, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's got such a broad answer. Because I think that, one, we do need to make it tougher on criminals that want to come here with bad intentions. As police, we're always going to be in that position. But I think we also have to educate parents, and we have to educate the community on what to look for and not be naive to the fact of what's in front of them a lot of times. When we're talking about gang stuff, you hear the term wannabe a lot, and that's a dangerous term, a very dangerous term, because if somebody is showing indicators of being involved in that type of criminality and they're getting connected to that type of folks, it's never I sign up today and I'm a hardcore criminal tomorrow. It's a process. And that beginning stage is really critical for parents to intervene, for the community to intervene, and to really try to curb that behavior, because there does come a point when a young person gets so involved that it's really difficult for them to turn back.
Are these drugs in, I mean, these gangs, excuse me, in certain parts of town only?
It's really spread out where Lexington is a city. It's changed a lot over the years. You know, there's historically probably areas that have always been a problem, if you will. But I would say we probably used to have 5 to 6 what we would call hot spots of criminal activity. And for our purposes, you could just say hotspots for gang activity. But now with the way that Lexington has changed, the areas that we have are probably not as big geographically, but it's more of a shotgun pattern now. And we probably now have 15 to 20 areas
really?
Where they're smaller pockets. But if you just think about, you know, how Lexington is set up, apartment complexes, you know, things that have been torn down and people have had to relocate, move to different areas, different sides of town. You know, they go somewhere and they don't stop doing what they're doing just because they move.
Our Fayette County Sheriff, Kathy Witt, with us and a couple of members of the Lexington Police Department. And if you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear it. Here's a nice note from Dan Laren, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney, good friend of all of ours. Says, good presentation this morning. Sergeant Phillips and the gang unit have been instrumental in dealing with this sort of thing in circuit court. We've had a lot of success identifying gang members and keeping them off the streets. Most of the cases involve drugs, guns, and or money, and we're doing the best we can to forfeit the weapons and contraband and keep the violent criminals in custody. Lieutenant Anderson's unit has brought a lot of cases involving frequent flyers to, and you know, we all know what frequent flyers are, to circuit court, the offenders that just keep reoffending. For similar treatment, and the Sheriff's Office is an important part of our Violent Crimes Task Force that works as a team to deal with violent crime and violent offenders in our community. So that's from Dan, and we appreciate that.
How nice of Dan.
Yeah.
So I want the Lieutenant and the Sergeant to tell our moms and dads, grandparents, whomever, who have authority over our children, what does this look like? What does this initial grooming look like? What do they need to be looking for on their children's phones, iPads, whatever they're using now, tablets, what do they need
to be
looking for
good
in
question.
Their rooms? If we have kids in Lexington, which we do, that are carrying guns, where are they putting those guns at home?
Yeah, good question.
So I think probably a good way to start that is let's talk about the groomer a little bit. That's a really good word when we're talking about this topic. Realize, parents, that the groomer is going to be somebody that's probably, I would say, 25 or older. That has done some prison time or is connected to somebody that has done some prison time, and they are teaching the children, obviously, things that parents are not going to want them involved in. Mm-hmm. The things to look for that groomer is going to teach are continued use of hand signs that are specific to gangs. They're going to teach them how to do the different symbolism that's going to be connected to gangs, because every gang has to have a way to identify itself. A lot of times gangs will use numbers like area codes. They'll use different times of the day They may use street addresses or blocks that they'll have. But these are indicators that, young people will generally, if depending on the age, will start doodling on school books, start writing on the walls in their bedrooms. You'll see them start to do, you know, where they're drawing tattoo-style figurines on their bodies. And then if they start getting those tattoos at young ages where it's not authorized by the parent or it's something the parent maybe doesn't understand, these are all kind of the processes that, young kids will go through. There's also behavior-wise things to look for, such as, you know, gang members really teach the OGs, as they call them, the original gangsters. They will teach young people to push back against authority of all sort, whether that's in school, whether that's at home, no matter whether it's a coach. They're gonna teach them, you know, to not listen to what that authority is telling them because they want the OG wants to be the one in control. So you'll see behavior patterns change where they're getting in trouble in more, you know, at school, maybe skipping school, missing school. And it always starts with petty crime. You'll see gang members at young ages getting involved in petty crime.
Maybe shoplifting or what?
So shoplifting, one that's really popular is breaking into cars. You know, that's one, that's a crime stat that the police department is always trying to battle. But you'll see them breaking into cars. They're primarily looking for guns and money when they're doing that sort of thing. So they'll break into cars for the gangs. They'll go out and boost at you know, at shopping places to try to get things.
Boost, what's that?
So that's where they're doing shoplifting. They'll go into the malls, into stores, and try to gain, you know, a lot of clothing and different things the gang can use. Bandanas are another thing to pay attention to. In the gang world, a bandana is a lot like a flag. They'll view that much like we will the American flag here in this country, and whatever color or symbology is tied to that flag, as they call it, becomes important to the gang member in order to kind of develop them in that process. So that's something else to look for. Violence is always connected to that as well. You'll see the young people that start becoming more violent with other students, towards parents, sometimes towards, you know, teachers and other folks. But there's a lot of behavior patterns that, will really start to show up within that first year of gang involvement that parents should really pay attention to and never look at as, well, they're just wanting to be this. Because what I think a lot of parents misunderstand is that OG, that hardened criminal, is teaching that. It's not just something that's coming from a TV show or some style of music. That all plays into the development. But they're being taught by somebody else, and that's a real key for parents to pay attention to.
I got a message here from Bob that asks a good question. It was one that I was going to ask. Any correlation to the rise in illegal aliens and gang activity? Are these gangs white, black? Are they Latino? Are they all of the above?
I think all of the above is by far the best answer. I think any group in society at any given time, we can correlate a set of problems that's going to go in any direction. For the most part, what I've seen in this town, the makeup of the gang, the way the population is distributed in the gang is all based on the neighborhood. It depends on what part of town. You know, you used to see more racial lines driven amongst gang members. But in today's day and age, it's all about money. And nobody looks at that the same way within the gang world itself like they used to.
Really?
Everybody's about the mighty green dollar. And so they're going to recruit who they think is going to benefit the gang. They're not going to care so much about the well-being of that person, and they're going to put them out there to make money, period. That's just the way it works.
Now, what about graffiti?
So graffiti has changed some. That's something the Sheriff's Department has always worked really closely with us on. They've got a great graffiti cleanup team, and I won't talk a lot about that because that's your all's bailiwick there. But they've
that's wonderful.
Yeah, they've done a great job with that. We've seen a little bit of a change in that because we've worked so closely with the Sheriff's Department in staying on top of that. A lot of your modern-day graffiti, like anything else, is being done via Snapchat, being done, you know, over the internet, social media. Communication amongst gang members has changed drastically, which makes it more challenging for us because used to you could see a message on the wall and break it down and say – and you could tell who was beefing with who, where the problems were. So it's more difficult for us to find that now.
Yeah, tell us about your graffiti program.
So it was started by Major Ron Watson several years ago at the suggestion of former Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, and it has been a very successful program, and I think it's successful because of the relationship the Sheriff's Office and the Police Department share, the partnership that we have with each other. And we have cleaned hundreds of thousands of tags from this community over the last, 10-plus years. I'm sure it's more than 10, and Ron will correct me when I get back to the office, but it has been a great program. But the sergeant is right. The way that gangs communicate, just like the way law-abiding citizens communicate, has changed. And so they have now gone more into the social media world. So the intel unit, the police department, then becomes that much more important in trying to break this down. And so I want to ask the lieutenant if he would talk to us also about what he sees as the increase lack of respect. I won't say it's as much disrespectful. It is the lack of respect these gang members, especially these young kids, have. Their feeling of lack of respect. And then I want him to talk about this target hardening that he was talking to me about on the break.
So just lack of respect they have for
humans.
For authority,
So
or for anybody, you say. Yeah.
Exactly.
So in that, I would probably say there's a strong correlation between that lack of respect and the drop in age that we spoke about earlier. Obviously, they don't have the maturity level, and with what they've been exposed to already and how they are being groomed, they just don't understand the consequences, and at that point they don't really care. And again, at a certain age, the consequences are obviously less. Some of those reasons I tend to agree with. But I think that the issues that we're dealing with are increasing in severity and increasing in numbers. We're seeing it. They will, they don't listen to the parents. They don't listen to the teachers. They'll fight the teachers. They truly don't care. And when we show up, it used to be that if we showed up, they would at least stop the criminal activity, the fighting, the yelling, the cursing. They may not want to do what we ask them to do, but we can usually get some compliance just through being there and talking to them. And that's really kind of gone out the window. They will look at us and really cuss us up one way and down the other. They'll fight us and really have no fear of consequences. They truly don't care. And I can't stress that enough. It's not an act. Sometimes it is, but most of the time
they
don't care.
Wow.
They don't care.
Tell us about target hardening.
So when Sergeant Phillips was talking about grooming and ways that we can try to prevent our youth from becoming involved in gang activity, what we've really tried to do as a department and as a unit is what I would just call target hardening our community and the youth. We do that as a unit, working with juvenile probation, working with school law enforcement, working with just different resources within the community, and then also as a department where we have community services. We have people that are ready to go out and speak to youth that are either trying to get out or trying not to get involved in that gang lifestyle. We have neighborhood resource officers that partner with everybody in the community, try to build that relationship and those bonds so that when someone has an issue, whether it's a youth or they go to their parent and the parent doesn't know who to go to, we are already plugged in and we can kind of push a button and just have tons of resources coming at them. And hopefully that makes it where if this person starts to get groomed or get exposed, we've already got a leg up on the people that are trying to turn them.
That's great.
Yeah, they've already made a connection, and our office does some similar things as well. But we're trying to sort of insulate our youth, grow them stronger, more confident in that doing the right thing gets them more than doing the wrong thing. Even though if they do the wrong thing initially, they might have more money in their pocket or in their hand. They might be viewed differently by those that they want to like them. We've got to all be in, though, in our community. I know recently I was saying to someone, we are hauling too many of our children into court, meaning we've got kids committing crime, too many kids committing too much crime. And the person sort of mumbled and said, they're not my kids. Well, they're all our kids.
Yeah.
We live in this community, and every corner in this community is all of ours. And so it's going to take all of us to really break it down. But I think we have the resources here in Lexington to do that.
Sounds like it. Back to the phones we go. And thanks for holding, JB.
Morning, Jack.
Morning.
Good morning to your guests. I have a question. Would you please explain to us what the difference is in disrespect and the lack of respect, and give us an example how it works? And I'll hang up.
All right, JB. Lack of respect, disrespect, is there a difference?
That's a good question. I think there's not really a big difference when you're talking about the topic today. I think the lack of respect probably is much more broad in that they don't respect anything. And then a disrespect in the gang world or the kind of thing that we do would be an immediate circumstance, something that happens at the moment. In respect in the gang world is a big deal because everybody's trying to gain it in their own way. A disrespect on a contact in the gang world between two folks or, you know, two people that are out there communicating or from police to that person would be something they would view as a downgrade. From the perspective of a gang member, they would look at if somebody were to talk down to them as a disrespect, but they're going to constantly do that to us. I mean, we see that on a regular basis because they don't respect us. And I think that lack of respect is bigger than just the moment. That's just in general.
Hey, Joe, would you tell that story you mentioned off the air? That's a chilling story.
Sure. So I would tie this into the recklessness and the increase in the youthful offenders that we're seeing now. But last summer I was working and talked to a young man who was 26. And I dealt with him when he was 18, 19 years old. And he was committing robberies, armed robberies. And so when I saw him that particular evening, we spoke and I was talking to him about how he had almost reached that statistical age where he had survived and his odds of going on to live a long life had increased. And he made the comment to me that when he was younger and 16, 18 years old, that he would rob people, but that he would never have hurt anyone and that he simply wanted their stuff and he wouldn't have hurt anybody. But he made the comment, in his words, that these kids nowadays will take your stuff and then shoot you anyway. And he was saying
just
this,
for the fun of it, the thrill of it?
Yes, and it's that lack of consequences, lack of understanding, lack of caring, and a combination of all that. And he was saying this at 26 years of age, and it struck me that a 26-year-old who lived the life and still wasn't doing 100% of the right thing all the time, used the phrase these kids nowadays, and he really sounded, you know, like he was 40 or 50, and in reality he was a decade removed from the majority of the people that we still deal with, and he was not wrong, and that was a moment. So 3 days later, the person that I spoke to was a murder victim here in Lexington, and that just really resonated with me because we had had really a conversation about that very thing, you know, 72 hours prior.
And are you assuming he was killed by another gang member?
I would say that would be a safe assumption, yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. Wow. And you just had the conversation 3 days before?
Yes, sir.
Wow. What can the courts do that they're not doing now? I want to get on the subject of putting these people in jail instead of letting them out. Do you guys have an opinion on that? I'm sure you do.
We would love to see a better retention rate of violent offenders, and not just in definition of violent per statute, but folks that hurt other people. That can get misconstrued a lot of times with what the definition of violent is with certain crimes, because there is a legal definition of what's considered violent. But there's a lot of crimes that are violent to everybody. You know, if you get hurt by somebody else, you consider it violence. And I think that we need to look at those things and really hold those accountable that are involved in violent crimes as a start. I think it's a bigger piece than just a one-time fix here. I think we're talking long-term of how we address, folks who are involved in organized crime. And there are some things, I think, being done to look at that. But I think we can start with violent offenders in broadening the viewpoint of what we consider violence, not just what fits a statutory realm.
And if they're juveniles, they're going to juvenile court, and the penalties there are less also.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we oftentimes, though, based on the sentence and the crime that they've been convicted of, Jack, when they turn 18 at midnight, right there at midnight, our office is there to take them from the juvenile facility and to transport
is
them
that
to
right?
the adult.
Yes. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Here's Bob says, let's see. If a store gets robbed at 3 a.m., how likely is it that it's related to a gang? That easy to say or hard to say?
That's yes. Really hard to say, because I think there's no time frame on when gang members are going to do crime. It's just going to be, you know, when they feel the opportunity is there.
But, again, it's all about money.
It's all about money, yes.
Mm. Well, you guys are doing a great job, and I'm proud that you're doing what you're doing. Do you feel like you have the resources that you need?
That's a really good question, because when you ask police that on any type of concern, we're always going to tell you we need more.
More, right.
Because like anybody else, we're fighting a pretty tough battle forward. But I think we're seeing things right now that are really coming together with agencies working closely together to try to help out on that resource need, where everybody's partnering to pick up their piece of the puzzle on this thing. And so that's helping. But to answer your question, I don't know that we'll ever answer that with a no, we have everything we need. We're always going to need more.
Sheriff, we've got about a minute.
Yeah, so if our listeners want to get more information about what it might look like as to whether or not that their child is involved in a gang, I'm sure that they can call you all, Lieutenant. I'm sure you've got programs in which you'll come. You'll go to the athletic teams to talk to them about what does this look like. You'll go to any kind of organization that our youth are involved in to talk to kids about what this looks like. Tell us how they can reach you.
What's the office number now? I know we just got some new phones installed, and they're not in my office.
So we have a number we've had since 2006, and that's 859-425-2316.
Okay.
And that line will come to me,
okay.
And then we can plug those needs into where they go.
Thank you, guys, and thank you, Sheriff.